Welcome to the Right Take Podcast, news, ideas, and conversations at the intersection of politics and culture, a project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I will be your host, Mark Tapson. Welcome back to the Right Take Podcast. I am your host, Mark Tapson. Thanks very much for joining me here at the intersection of politics and culture. We are approaching the end of the year, obviously. And equally obviously, we're right on the cusp of a new year, and so I thought it appropriate to take this opportunity to look backward on 2024 and briefly consider where we have been and how we got here, and then look forward to 2025 and consider briefly where we are going and how we're going to get there. This year was the culmination of 4 years of Democrat rule in America, and I suspect you will agree with me that it was 4 years of the willful deconstruction of American greatness. I should say continued deconstruction, because apart from a 4-year break in which Donald Trump struggled to make America great again, we have been under Democrat rule, specifically Barack Obama's rule, for 12 of the last 16 years. Yes, I know that Joe Biden was ostensibly and nominally President of the United States, and still is, in theory, but I think we all know that Biden has been, for the length of his term in office, a puppet president of questionable mental capability, to put it politely, whose strings have been pulled by the unholy triumvirate of Shadow President Barack Obama in conjunction with his strategic partners, left-wing ideologues Valerie Jarrett and Susan Rice. By the way, to find out more about all of these left-wing ideologues, go to the Freedom Center's website, discoverthenetworks.org, which is our indispensable online encyclopedia of the left and its networks. It's an incredible resource whereby you can dig deeply into the biographies and activism and connections of many, many radicals and their organizations. Again, that's discoverthenetworks.org, which I think you will find addictively enlightening. So anyway, Biden has never been anything but a convenient, if angry and bumbling, figurehead for the behind-the-scenes subversion of America, spearheaded by Barack Obama and his cronies. And Biden has been at the forefront of arguably the most accelerated radicalization of politics that we have ever seen in this country. A radicalization launched with the election of Barack Obama, who laid the groundwork for, and has never stopped working on, all of the current chaos ravaging our nation. Whether it is the ascendance of Black Lives Matter, the defunding of the police movement, a two-tier justice system in which George Soros-supported judges, prosecutors, and DAs target political and ideological enemies while freeing convicted felons, DEI initiatives, diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, open borders, the indoctrination of our youth into favoring socialism over capitalism, the ascendance of gender ideology, which, as I often say, I believe is the tip of the spear of the cultural Marxist assault on civilization, the demonization of nationalism and the embrace of globalism and globalist authorities, the full-on assault on free speech, the normalization of anti-white racism, the politicization of every aspect of our personal lives from sports to bathrooms, the woke neutering of our military, and on, in a nutshell, the subversion of every cultural norm and value and tradition of the greatest civilization in world history, and the greatest nation in that civilization, America. Change my mind. And that's where we were. That is the nadir, the low point of America, where things stood this year all the way up to November. And obviously, the political focal point of this last year was the presidential election, in which the once and future president, Trump, led an absolutely astounding red landslide and claimed a mandate from the American people for hope and change. Not the sort of hope and change Barack Obama was selling, a fundamental transformation of the U.S. into the neo-Marxist utopia that the left dreams of, but the sort of hope and change that patriotic Americans have been craving since the days of the manufactured COVID pandemic, which the left exploited to subvert Trump's re-election in 2020, and to flex its totalitarian muscles around the country. Now, all of that left-wing radicalization's momentum that I referred to a moment ago hit a brick wall with the election, and surprisingly, at least to my mind, is already in retreat. It had long been my assumption and my argument that in order to reclaim the culture which the left had long ago captured in their decisive victory of the culture war, conservatives were going to have to undertake their own long march through the institutions, as the cultural Marxists called it, just as the left did in the last century. I thought it might take decades, and I thought it would require, as many prominent conservatives did, the creation of a parallel culture that would enable us to flourish with our own content creation and distribution networks and audiences. In fact, that parallel culture is already being built and is on the rise. But now it looks like the cultural institutions that the left has captured, that is, the entertainment industry, the mainstream media, education, and not just higher education, but education at the K-12 level, it looks like those institutions in which progressivism is deeply entrenched are in the process of collapsing. Or, if not collapsing, then they've at least been rocked on their heels by the stunning Democrat defeat in November. I think Democrats knew they were in trouble trying to run the epically incompetent and unprecedentedly unlikable Kamala Harris against the comeback kid Trump, which accounts for her campaign that focused on keeping her out of the media spotlight, but I don't think the Democrats expected to lose. And I certainly don't think they expected to be completely steamrolled. They were left demoralized, shell-shocked, and exhausted, and into that breach streamed a victorious Trump with an unorthodox collection of nominees and picks for his new administration, who promised to take a wrecking ball to the systemic progressivism and the treasonous deep state mechanism that have controlled Washington, D.C. over the last 4 years, and 12 of the last 16. Instead of a long uphill campaign to loosen the stranglehold that the left has on political and cultural power in this country, Trump is already leading a rout of the left and hasn't even moved back into the White House yet. Now, I don't want to suggest that the left has given up, or that everything will be smooth sailing from here on out. Far from it. As my friend the journalist Michael Walsh always says, the left never sleeps, they never rest, they never quit. I think the Democrats just need a little time to regroup, to shake off their shell-shocked paralysis, and to get back in touch with their rabid hatred of Donald Trump and his movement to make America great again. Because if there's anything the left hates, it's an American citizen who believes in American greatness, American exceptionalism. I'm sure you will recall that Barack Obama dismissed American exceptionalism as, well, unexceptional. Anyway, I had previously assumed that if Trump won the election, which I felt he would, even despite widespread voter fraud on the part of the Democrats, all hell would break loose the very next morning, if not the very night of the election. I assumed there would be George Floyd-level rioting and violence and looting and unhinged Women's March protests, that we would see a resurgence of Black Lives Matter and Antifa domestic terrorism. None of that has happened so far, but I will be surprised if it doesn't rev back up as early as the inauguration. Certainly, from that point on, we're going to see the resistance back in action, both inside and outside D.C., and it will very likely be nonstop throughout Trump's presidency. And as terrible as this is to contemplate, I would bet money on the fact that we have not seen the last of the assassination attempts against Trump, or for that matter, against his VP J.D. Vance, who in some ways is more of a threat in the long run to the left than Trump is. What the left fears, and what I would love to see, as I'm sure you would, is 4 years of Trump, followed by 8 years of J.D. Vance. I think that would be just about enough to make America great again. So, we cannot afford to be complacent, but I am very heartened and excited about the momentum that Trump has built so far. For the most part, I'm pleasantly surprised to see that Trump has overcome a bad habit during his first presidency, which was a tendency to surround himself with the wrong people, because this time around he's done some out-of-the-box thinking to bring on board people who are going to smash the old ways of politics as usual and get America on a fast track to greatness. So that's a quick summation of where we were in 2024 and how we got there, and where we are heading as we go into 2025. If things keep going the way they have since Election Day, then I think America is facing possibly its brightest future yet. It's going to be a contentious next 4 years under Trump, a wild ride, so we cannot afford to be complacent, as I said, or caught off guard. But if Trump and his team can keep the momentum going, if he can avoid being his own worst enemy, and if the damage done by Republican rhinos can be kept to a minimum, then what was once the uncontested world superpower may be in for an unprecedented comeback. Trump seriously here has an opportunity to remake not just the country, but the world. Democrats are the party of chaos and instability, and they've certainly demonstrated that over the last 4 years, and every time they've been in office. But Trump has a chance to stabilize a world that is on the brink of world war, and that is historic. That MAGA counter-revolution has already begun, and Trump hasn't even settled back into the Oval Office yet. Domestically, Trump, who has vowed to make border security, including the mass deportation of illegals, a day-one focus, has already initiated back-channel discussions with the governments of Mexico and El Salvador to coordinate the deportations. The left's racist DEI programs, which Trump has condemned, that were corroding every institution from the military to corporate America to higher education, they're already being rolled back. Employees of bloated bureaucratic agencies in the crosshairs of Trump's new Department of Government Efficiency Commission are already preparing to jump ship. Internationally, Trump's victory is forcing a massive geopolitical reassessment as foreign leaders from Europe to Taiwan and Iran to Russia try to figure out how to deal with the unpredictability of Trump's return. Trump has put the brakes on, for example, on our hurtling toward World War III by putting Putin and Zelensky on notice that he will end the war in Ukraine. Israel, which is at war on several fronts against the existential enemies of the West, is reassured that it once again has no better ally in the White House, while our enemy China knows that it no longer has an American president in its pocket. Globalist institutions like the World Health Organization, which Trump vows to exit, are panicking that a nationalist is in the White House and they can no longer count on U.S. funding. These are just a few of the ways in which a new Trump era is poised to radically reset national and world affairs in ways that, as my colleague Victor Davis Hanson put it, will herald a return to sanity. By the way, my most recent article at frontpagemag.com is about the Front Page team having chosen Trump as its Man of the Year for 2024. Each year for nearly a century, Time magazine has been identifying the man or woman who has, for better or worse, done the most to shape the world and the headlines over the previous 12 months. As its Person of the Year for 2024, the Time editors chose President Donald Trump, of course, whom they rightly note has played a larger role in changing the course of politics and history than anyone else over the last decade. It's important to keep in mind, however, that Time's Person of the Year award is usually, but not necessarily, intended to celebrate the honoree. Hence, past selections have included such notorious figures as Hitler and Stalin. The magazine's commentary on Trump makes it clear that its editors see him in the same light as those evil icons. They describe him as a grievance-mongering, vengeful, raging authoritarian and convicted criminal who intends to smash the norms of liberal democracy, which Time believes are upheld by the Democrat Party. They voted for Trump as Person of the Year because they cannot deny his influence and impact, but they obviously deeply resent that this quote-unquote strongman, who threatens not only to derail the left's freight train toward one-party hegemony, but to remake the entire entrenched political order, simply will not go away, no matter what obstacle they throw in his path. Relentless lawfare, a coordinated media campaign to demonize him as Hitler 2.0, even assassination attempts. And speaking of the latter, it's difficult not to see divine intervention, or the hand of destiny, if you prefer, at work in Trump's miraculous survival of the shooting at a Butler, Pennsylvania rally earlier this year, where a slight turn of his head at the sound of a sniper's first shot resulted in the second bullet merely nicking his ear rather than lethally shattering his skull. In a moment that will live in history, despite the media's attempt to send it down the memory hole, Trump then rose up with a pumping fist amid his Secret Service cover, exhorting the crowd to fight. It was this moment, I think, that singularly demonstrated his fearless pugnacity, galvanized his supporters like never before, and arguably sealed his election victory. Well, each year Front Page Mag 2 reviews the past 12 months and selects a man or woman of the year. And like Time magazine, for 2024, we too have chosen Trump. But unlike Time, our award is meant to unreservedly celebrate the honoree. Past recipients of our title, for example, include freedom fighters like Geert Wilders in 2008, Stephen Bannon in 2016, and last year, a collective choice, the Israeli Defense Forces soldier. Unlike Time and the rest of the mainstream left-wing news media, we at the Freedom Center see Donald Trump as a patriot and a man of the people. You know, Kamala Harris's running mate Tim Walz, who tried to sell himself to voters as a relatable, Midwestern, regular guy, struggled to understand after the election how he and Kamala could have lost to a New York City billionaire. Well, part of the answer is that Americans found Walz and Harris to be inauthentic, out-of-touch radicals, representing a party that put ideology over country, whereas they believe Trump truly loves this country and his fellow Americans. He truly believes in American exceptionalism. You may recall that Barack Obama dismissed American exceptionalism, as I mentioned earlier. And Trump has a vision for propelling America out of its Democrat-driven decline back to preeminent superpower status. Voters wanted a leader to make America great again, and that's what they got this last November. Thank you, as always, for joining me here at the intersection of politics and culture. Don't forget to subscribe to The Right Take so you can keep up with all the important conversations we're having here. And 2025 promises to have a lot of those. So if you like what you hear, please leave that positive review. Happy New Year, and be seeing you. The Right Take with Mark Tapson is a project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center and Front Page Magazine. Unauthorized reproduction of this podcast without express written consent is prohibited.